You're listening to episode 344 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hello, friends. Welcome back to this episode of the Building Psych Strength podcast. My name is Dr. April, and I'm your host. This week is a really interesting week on the podcast because we're going to be talking about some very fundamental things. These are fundamental things that pertain to how we relate to other people, how we relate to ourselves, how we experience life, and how we show up either effectively or ineffectively, depending upon how these things play out. This is some of the most important content that you can really take in and start to apply in your life because of how broadly applicable it can be. So I really want you to take note in this episode. I'm going to introduce this week's guest, and then I want to talk about why the topic that we're talking about today is so fundamental. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Joseph Schrand. He is Chief Medical Officer of Riverside Community Care, headquartered in Dedham, Massachusetts. He is a lecturer of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and triple board certified in adult psychiatry, child and adolescent psychiatry, and a diplomat of the American Board of Addiction Medicine. Here's where it gets really cool. Dr. Schrand, or Dr. Joe, I'm just going to call him Dr. Joe from now on because that's what he prefers. Dr. Joe has developed a strength-based model called the I Am approach. This is a huge deviation from how we have thought about people in psychology, but also people pretty much in medicine as well, in that it's moving away from this view that there's something wrong with you, this pathological view. This idea that you have a, quote, disorder, to viewing the patient or the person as operating currently at their maximum potential. So let's unpack what that means for a second. What this essentially means is that if you're in a situation where you're feeling super anxious and you're really having a hard time moving forward, maybe it's a presentation you have to give or a difficult conversation that you have to have, or, you know, maybe you're in a situation where you're battling an addiction and you are fighting the urge to give in to that addiction. Or maybe you're in a situation where somebody has made you so angry, they have said something that has triggered you and you are seeing red and you're reacting in that situation. A lot of times, and historically, the way that we would view that is there's something wrong in those situations. But instead, Dr. Joe and his I Am approach would say, no, there are actually a lot of factors at play here, specifically four factors. He'll get into them: home, biological, social, and something he calls the IC factor. When you put these all together and you take into account everything that's happening in these four domains, really, you, the person who sits at the heart of all these four domains, are doing your best in that very moment. You're reacting the best that you can in that moment. And in the next moment, you can make a new decision. You can react differently. So this episode gets into so much fundamental stuff, and I just want to highlight a few things so that you know what to look forward to. One, this episode gets into the idea of us really becoming a good observer of how we're feeling in different interactions, and also getting really good at realizing that we are in sort of our limbic mind, that we are feeling reactive, that we're having a fight, flight, freeze response that is causing us to behave in a way that maybe we don't want to be behaving in that moment. So we're going to talk a lot about becoming sort of an observer of yourself and recognizing that. We also talk a lot about the fundamental shift that you can make when you move from limbic mind to your prefrontal cortex, when you get more contemplative, and some just rock solid strategies for how to do that. And this would work in any of those situations I just said. So if you're feeling anxious about a presentation and you're really freaked out about it, these strategies will work. If you are feeling highly reactive and angry at somebody, these strategies will work. If you're under an incredible amount of stress, these strategies will work. It's such a great, like I said, fundamental way of approaching the way that we interact with life. And then we also talk a lot about this idea that there's nothing wrong with you. You're not doing something wrong. Even if you're experiencing an outcome that isn't as good as you want to experience it, even if you are still struggling with, say, maybe you are a person who's prone to anger and outbursts and reactivity, you're doing the best you can in that moment. And by looking at this I am approach or this full framework, you can start to zoom out and say, okay, I did the best that I could in that moment, but if I want to do better next time, what small changes can I make in these four domains in order to elicit a better response next time? This is like neuroscience meets mindfulness meets life design, all wrapped up into the best stuff. And just by way of introducing Dr. Joe, the man, you are going to adore him. He just oozes empathy and compassion and care. You can tell that he loves what he does and that he has a true passion for helping people understand this information. So I'm absolutely thrilled for you to meet Dr. Joe. Last few things that I want to mention about him before we get into the interview are the books that he's written, because they are books on topics that are top of mind for people, some of the most common problems that people encounter. He's written a book called Manage Your Stress, Overcoming Stress in the Modern World. Fairly common, right? A pretty common problem. Second book, Outsmarting Anger, 7 Strategies to Diffuse Our Most Dangerous Emotion. He's also written The Fear Reflex, 5 Ways to Overcome It and Trust Your Imperfect Self. And finally, his next book comes out. It's called Unleashing the Power of Respect, The I Am Approach. So tons of books. There's more than even what I've mentioned, but I just wanted to mention those ones because they're so common. He's such a wealth of information and he's so great at making it very applicable in your life. So I'm absolutely thrilled for you to meet Dr. Joseph Charand. And here's that interview. Dr. Joe, I'm so excited to have you here for this episode of the podcast. I think we are kindred spirits in a lot of ways, and I think you have a lot to share with this audience. So thanks for being here.
I am delighted to be here, April. Thank you very much. And to all the listeners, nice to see you.
Yeah, see you. Hear us. Be here. Be nice in your ears, in your earbuds.
I'll be in there. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, I love it. So one of the reasons why you and I are a bit of kindred spirits is almost our approach or the way that we think about, you know, human behavior in the field of psychology. And historically, when I think about the field, and it's probably because this was the only, you know, field that we had as like an analog to jump off of when psychology was being formed, but we kind of looked to the medical field and we said, okay, let's mimic medicine. People are going to come to us. They're going to be sick. They have diagnoses and problems, and then we're going to take steps and we're going to try to fix what's wrong with those people. And we've grown and evolved a bit since then as a field. And especially with your approach and the work that you do, this seems to run a bit counter to that. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, your view on this historical approach and just how your work would characterize it maybe a little bit more differently?
Absolutely. And it's the I am approach. That's what we'll be talking about. And I just want to, you know, preface it by saying, you know, there wasn't any sense of trying to do harm before. You know, yeah. I mean, as a physician, the first rule is do no harm. That's what we take an oath to do.
Right.
So when psychology, psychiatry, medicine in general, when we approach people, it was really trying to help people.
Yep.
Trying to fix them, trying to make sure that they were doing as well as they could. But in so doing, we didn't recognize that we actually may have been contributing to their self-image as being sick and broken. It wasn't malicious. It was really, the whole intent was to try to help you. There's this thing called the biopsychosocial model, which originated in the late 1970s. This guy, Dr. Engel, was trying to counter the medical model, which was everything was just about biology. And he said, wait a sec, you know, there's more that goes into somebody being sick and broken than that. It's what's going on in their psychology, in their world around them. You know, the biopsychosocial model. This is why people are sick and broken. And he was really trying to do good. And he did good. He helped move medicine and psychology away from this idea that it's just this one domain. But what he didn't know about was something called theory of mind. Theory of mind. It's not theory of quantum mechanics or theory of relativity. It's a terrible scientific clunky term to describe that we can't see someone's mind. So we have to theorize and guess, what are they thinking or feeling? Especially, what are they thinking or feeling about me? So April, you're absolutely right. What I am doing is extending the biopsychosocial model by incorporating theory of mind, because I truly, truly do not believe that anyone is sick or broken. I really, really believe that. I want people to hear that, because it is so, it's like, wait a sec, this is a paradigm shift. What do you mean no one's broken? How can we not be broken? There's a huge, huge reason why we think that. But even that is the best you can do. That's what the I am is. This is my current maximum potential. At this moment in time, I'm doing the best I can, but with the potential to change in the very next second to another best I can. It just changes things. It allows us to really look at ourselves without worrying that we're going to be finding something that is broken. Nothing is broken. But if you don't like what's going on in your I am, you can change it.
That's so good. I mean, oh my gosh, there's so many rabbit holes I want to go down. One of the things that we hear often in our trainings in Peak Mind is that we start to describe to people, you know, they're sort of in their own experience of a challenge that they're going through. That's usually when this comes up, is they're in a challenging situation, marital difficulties, or working with a lot of stress within their family or their job, or maybe both, or the pandemic we've all been going through. They're in a challenging situation, and there's this lack of understanding as to why they might be feeling, behaving, responding in the way that they are. And you're right. We immediately go to, I'm not doing this well. I'm not doing this good enough. I'm bad at this. Other people are so much better than I am. And we get into this immediate blame cycle that doesn't help anybody. And so I love that your approach looks at us, because when you start to tease it apart for people, they start to see, oh my gosh, I am kind of a logical actor here. I'm reacting to a lot of different inputs and stimuli in a fairly logical way. And you start to have less of that self-deprecating layer that you just mentioned. So I would love if you would give us an overview of the I am approach, especially because, you know, as you look at the logo of it, the center is so important, and you touched on it just a moment ago, but can you give us kind of the lay of the land of the model? And then we'll probably dig into a lot of different places in it.
I would be delighted and honored. And just to say, when you doubt yourself, that's still an I am. That's still the best you can do at that moment, but it's important to understand why. And just like you said, you know, we can be so reactive. It's much more important to be reflective, right? Much more effective to be reflective and to wonder instead of worry. So the I am approach. I believe that we're doing the best we can, but we're influenced by four domains. Your home domain. No one's going to argue your home has had an influence on who you are. The social domain, which is the rest of the world. That's you going to work. That's you being in school. That's walking down the street. That's going into a store. And you can appreciate that stuff that happens at home can influence the choices you make in the social domain and vice versa, you know? So those two domains, the home and the social domain, are outside. And then the two internal domains, the biological domain of your brain and body. Am I hungry? Am I tired? Am I digesting lunch? And then the I see domain. How do I see myself? How do I think other people see me? My current concept of myself. When I created this back in 1982, I had no idea about the biopsychosocial model, no idea about theory of mind. I just thought, you know, let's change the paradigm. Let's look at people doing the best they can. And one of the things that's important is, how do I think people see me? So these four domains interact all the time. But I truly believe we respond the best we can. You don't have to like your I am. You don't have to condone it. It's not a free ride. You're going to be held responsible. Just because it's the best you can do at that moment doesn't mean you're not held responsible, because everything you do has a natural consequence. And the I am isn't even saying you're going to win and be successful. It's important to understand that. It's not saying you're always going to win. And for some people, success is when you love going to work and love going home. For some people, success is having food in the refrigerator. For some people, success is having a home to have a refrigerator. For some people, success is just being able to wake up and get through the day. You will decide what success means to you, and it will change from moment to moment as your I am changes. But instead of judging yourself and other people as less than and broken, should be doing better, what's wrong with you? Let's look again at why we do what we do based on the influence of the four domains. And I just want you to think about the words "look again" for a moment. Look again, reverse them. Again, look. Again, to repeat something, look like a spectator. Let's respect why people do what they do without judging them. Let's respect why we do what we do without judging ourselves. When is the last time you got angry at someone treating you with respect? I mean, you don't. Think about it. Anger is an emotion designed to change things. We get angry when we want someone to do something different, start doing something, stop doing something. We blame ourselves, our inner critic. We're angry. I should be doing better. But being respected feels great. We don't get angry. Respect leads to value, which is what everybody wants. Think about every person you've ever met in your life. The common thread that binds us is we just want to feel valued by somebody else. It's true. Every person you've met, that's what you want too. And what's cool is, with the I am, at every and any moment in time, you can remind someone of their value. I respect you. You're doing the best you can. I want to understand why. Every time you remind someone of their value, you increase your own value. People want to be around people and make them feel good. Respect leads to value, and value leads to trust. And trust is the antidote to anger, fear, and sadness. Because when you trust, you can really look at yourself and not worry that you're going to be seen as less valuable. You can make those mistakes. You can try those different things. You can cross that street. You can walk across the room and ask that person for a date. Because even if they say no, that's their I am.
Yeah. I want to dive in even deeper, because I want people to really understand this concept. At the center of your model is this I am. And from what it sounds like, this is sort of who you are and how you're showing up and being in the world right now at this moment.
Yeah, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This right is me. Now. This is me. That's right. I matter. Right now at this moment, with the potential to change in the very next second, because we're always changing. You know, we've spent so much time, and you started off talking about this, people come to people like us for treatment. But treatment implies there's something broken.
Yeah.
And we need to fix it. The I am is saying, it's not about treatment. It's about adaptation, evolution, change. That's who we are as human beings. You know, I just want to point out just for a moment the biological domain. Remember, the four domains. Mm-hmm. I'm a psychiatrist. I prescribe medicine. All my patient teachers learn about the I am. And they understand that if we add a medicine, all we're doing is making a small change in the biological domain.
Mm.
You change the environment, you change response. This is the first truth of the I am. Because the four domains interact, small changes can have big effects.
Yes. Yeah.
You don't need to change everything. You make a small change, it can have big effect. That small change may be something as simple as, I'm just wondering what you're thinking. I mean, asking someone in your home domain or social domain, looking at yourself a different way, saying, oh, so this is the best I can do. To be reflective instead of reflexive. To wonder instead of worry. Small change can have a big effect. First truth. Second truth of the I am. Everyone's got one. Everyone has an I see domain, interested in how you see them, mm-hmm. which has an effect on their biological domain, because you know it feels different when you feel respected or disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of someone's home and social domain. Second truth of the I am. You control no one. You influence everyone. You get to choose the kind of influence you want to be.
Mm.
That's power. That's responsibility. So many of the folks who come to people like me feel they have no influence, no power. They see themselves as broken. And all I want to do is just remind them of their value by showing them the I am. Okay, so the best you can do right now is come to see me, a psychiatrist or a psychologist or someone, because you feel broken. No, you're not broken. Let's look at the four domains. Here's your roadmap. Here's your roadmap to change. These are the four domains. What small change do you need to make in any one of them so you have that new success and you go to your new I am?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. What I love about it, just at its core, it reminds me, I had this corporate job earlier in my career. One of the best nuggets that I took away from that company, though, one of the values they instill in you at that company, and it's a very, very large company. If I said it, everybody would know what it was, is that when you're interacting with people, you assume positive intent. Even if they did something that had terrible consequences, like really hurt your feelings or was inappropriate or whatever, to assume positive intent. And I hear an element of that in this, in the way that we react or interact with other people, and even in the way that we interact with ourselves. So in my current I am, even if I'm behaving in a way that had a consequence that wasn't great, can I assume positive intent? And can I put myself in a position of, I love that you were talking about wondering instead of worrying. And then you give people a framework of what to wonder about. What must be happening or what might be happening in each of these domains, these four domains, that might lead a person like me or a person like that to behave in that way? And you can think through dozens or more reasons when you think holistically, the way that your model is, why like a very well-intentioned person might have done what that person did. And it just changes, to your point exactly, it changes the way that we interact with other people, because instead of being combative and being accusatory, then it's more of a compassionate stance that we can take as we interact with others and with ourselves.
Absolutely, totally. That's it. We use this a lot with kids who've been bullied.
Oh, yeah. Right?
It's like, okay, so the best that bully can do to increase their value is try to decrease yours. What's going on in that person's home domain or social domain?
Yeah.
What's going on the way they see themselves, the way they think others see them, their biological domain? So yeah, it gives you the opportunity to step back and say, okay, that's the best that person can do, but I don't have to like it, but I'm going to respect it. I'm going to look again at why they do what they do. To understand it. I just want to explain a little bit about some of the deep evolutionary aspect to this.
Yes.
Yeah. Because the biological domain is a powerful part of the four domains. And why is it so important for human beings to feel valuable? I want to just sort of give an explanation. Millions of years ago, we weren't the biggest animal, the fastest animal, or the strongest animal. We were isolated mammals scurrying around, hoping not to be lunch. We were prey. And then we formed these small social groups. And our survival potential increased so dramatically that human beings are everywhere. But to access the protection of the group, you have to contribute to the group, which means you have to have value. So when a human being perceives through their IC domain that they may be seen as less valuable, it activates in the biological domain the primitive, ancient fight, flight, freeze response. I need to survive because I'm going to be kicked out of my group and I'm going to be lunch. So that's what happens in this very quick, simple way, because there are these two main parts of the brain, the limbic system, which is irrational. It's about emotions, impulsivity. It's where memories live. It happens to be where addictions start. It's our reptilian brain. But human beings have evolved this amazing new brain, the neocortex, new cortex brain, our new brain, especially the part right behind your forehead, the prefrontal cortex, responsible for thinking, for rational thought, for making a plan, executing the plan, anticipating what will happen next. It also happens to be where theory of mind lives, this ability to appreciate someone else's point of view. Because how important is that as a social animal? I need to know what other people are thinking and feeling, but really what they're thinking and feeling about me. So that's why this value thing is so important. That's why the I am says, relax. You are doing the best you can right now. It's not a free ride. You're responsible for it. But responsibility is different than blame and shame. Responsibility is empowering. So I can now do something to move my I am. Here are the four domains. What small change do I need to make? What kind of influence do I really want to be on people? Mm-hmm. We have spent millennia increasing our value by decreasing somebody else's. That's what we've done, whether an individual or a race or an entire country. It's happening right now in our world.
Yes, in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways. And then we're astonished that the other person, the other system, the other country does the same. Now they're saying, wait. You can't increase your value by decreasing mine. I'm going to increase my value by decreasing yours. Mm-hmm. And then we're astonished we have war. Mm-hmm. It's an I am. Mm-hmm. But we can do something different. That I am is very limbic. I have to be better than you to be valuable. No, not at all. We are a community. We're one group. It's called humanity. We don't have to be this group and that group and this group and that group. Whenever you remind someone of their value, you increase your own value. This has such power. This is unleashing the power of respect. This is what it's about. Because we have a prefrontal cortex that can anticipate the future, if we stay limbic, we will destroy ourselves. Mm-hmm. It will still be an I am, but I don't have to like it.
Yeah. I want to push even into that even further, this idea that, right, we have these, and this is oversimplifying, but for this purpose, I think it works great, right? Limbic versus this more rational, contemplative part of our mind, brain, whichever word you want to use today. You said so beautifully that if we stay limbic, it's just destructive in a lot of ways. It's destructive in the way that we interact with other people. It's destructive to us and our own relationships with ourselves and just everything that goes on internally with us. I want to go back to your notion of wonder or curiosity or experimentation or questioning, right? If one of our goals in terms of how we want to function, like everybody wants to like get through life just doing a good job, like we want to feel good in the process of doing that. Like a common goal for people, I want to show up and be, in psychology, we would call that effective. Like we get good outcomes, we show up and we behave in a way that we can be proud of. We have to get out of that limbic, very reactionary, emotion-driven, very subconscious sort of mind. And I love that you lean on wonder, because that limbic system doesn't run on questioning and seeking answers. It doesn't run on what might be happening here. That's a rational thought process. And I don't want people to miss the power and the breadth of how you can apply this in your life. If you find yourself getting highly reactionary, highly emotionally charged in any situation for any reason, curiosity is like the little switch to turn on the part. Because what you're trying to do, and I would love your hot take on this, like what you're trying to do is you can't force your limbic mind to stop. It's like there and it's active, but you can also almost like dilute out its impact on you by turning on a different part of your mind, and curiosity does that. So go, I want your take on this because it's such a powerful tool.
Absolutely. You know, how many times have you done something impulsively,
yeah,
limbically, yeah, right, and slapped your forehead going, oh, what was I thinking? Well, you weren't, but you're trying to jumpstart your prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
You know, you slap your forehead. So we need the limbic system. The limbic system has helped us survive for millions and millions of years, but there are no more saber-toothed tigers.
Yeah.
Right? So the first thing, the wonder, is really simply to recognize that your limbic system is activated.
Mm.
I feel something. I feel angry. I feel sad. I feel scared. I'm in the fight, flight, freeze response.
Mm-hmm.
When you recognize that, you have immediately shifted to your prefrontal cortex, because recognition is a prefrontal cortical function.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize what I'm feeling. I have a blog in Psychology Today called A Simple Technique to Manage Anxiety. It's based on cognitive behavioral therapy. What you think if it's what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
The first step is simply to recognize that you're anxious. Recognize that your limbic system is activated. So that's the first step. That's how we begin to move to the I am. Because, okay, something happened in my home or social domain. My IC thought I was being seen as less valuable. It activated my biological domain and my fight, flight, freeze. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
What small change happened in any of those domains that I went into this primitive ancient survival response? It's an I am, but I don't need to now stay there. You remember, fight, flight, freeze has been critical for our survival. When you're faced with a predator that you know you can beat, you would approach it and fight it. In humans, that's anger. Anger is an approach emotion. I'm going to fight you. Sometimes you're faced with a predator that you know you can't beat, so you want to flee. That's flight. You want to get away from there. In humans, that's anxiety, an avoidance emotion. Sometimes you're faced with a predator that you know you can't beat, but you just can't get away from. So the next best strategy is to freeze, become invisible, hope the danger passes. And in humans, I think that's depression, where you're faced with something you can't beat, you can't get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of those things potentially diminishes your value. But human beings have evolved three new Fs, right? Family, friendship, fellowship, if you're not very good at spelling, physician, but where we share the worry. We become a community where we remind each other of their value. We say, you know, we're going to preserve this. We're going to help you. So the limbic system, critical part of our survival, but we don't need to live there anymore. We don't want it to go away. you know, appreciate that limbic system. Thanks for checking out for me. But prefrontal cortex says, I'll take it from here. Let me think this one through. Let me be reflective instead of reflexive. Let me wonder instead of worry. Wonder is prefrontal. Worrying is limbic. Bottom line, take home message, keep it frontal. Don't go limbic.
That's so good. That's so good. I love this model in how comprehensive it is, but also how much it maps over onto our life experience in a way that we can understand, right? Like, I mean, all of us can look at our own, you know, life experiences and we can say, okay, well, I understand what my home domain is. Like, I get that. And I know the people who are or aren't there and how that feels in my life and how I tend to react there. And I just love that this gives people this amazing framework for how they can approach how they experience life and make changes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And remember, every one of those people in your home or social domain has an I am.
Yeah.
So they're doing the best they can. So here's a simple technique. When somebody is saying something to you that maybe activates your limbic system or you feel disrespect or something, you can say, wait a sec, are you saying that? Mm-hmm. And when you use the words, are you saying that, they get an opportunity to reflect. But what have you really done? You have not confronted them. You're asking them to clarify, which means you are actually saying they're valuable. What they're saying is valuable to you. I just want to be sure I understand it correctly. You've given them a gift of time. You're listening. You're allowing and encouraging the conversation. It's really important to understand one other part of our brain called mirror neurons. And they were controversial at first, but part of our brain where we mirror other people's emotions. We've all done it. You go to a movie, you see something happy, you feel happy, sad, you feel sad, scared, you feel scared. We mirror each other's emotions. So when someone's angry, we may get angry. But once you understand mirror neurons, you can say, wait a sec, that's their I am. Let me be respectful and I will activate their mirror neurons so they can become respectful and valued and trust. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish it was really complicated, but it's really not. I mean, this is really simple, simple stuff that you can do every day. I haven't discovered anything. Whoa, this is amazing. But when you shift the paradigm from being sick and broken to doing the best you can, it changes stuff. What is, you're listening, but you can't see April's smile right now. She was just smiling in response to this because it's so true. Mm-hmm. It activates this part of our brain that goes, ah, what a relief. You know, talk about psychiatry and psychology and medicine. We have created in many ways, without meaning to, innocently, we've created a world of stigma. Mm-hmm. By using the word disorder.
Yep.
Bipolar disorder, attention deficit disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, first of all, it's a stress. There's no disorder response.
I was going to say, I can't think of anything more like logical and adaptive. Like, of course
exactly,
that's what happened, right? Yeah.
So as soon as you are this disorder, you lump people into two groups. This group is okay, but that group is disordered.
Right.
I don't trust them. Disorder means I can't trust them. I can't anticipate their action. I don't know what they're going to do. Okay, so mistrust works backwards. Mistrust leads to devaluation, which leads to disrespect. Mm-hmm. This is part of what we have in our world as well.
Yeah.
We have a world in which we've separated people into groups for what reason? Because we were trying in medicine, we were trying to do good. And it's important for people to understand that. But we're at a different place now. We didn't know about theory of mind when Engel created his biopsychosocial model. He didn't know. It wasn't understood until many years later. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you integrate the I see domain, you change the paradigm, because I know you're interested in what other people think or feel about you. Mm-hmm. And I want to be sure that you know that you're respected and valued. And that allows trust. And trust is based on a neurohormone called oxytocin, not OxyContin, oxytocin, which is the chemical that's released when somebody says you're amazing, you're great, and you get that rush. That's oxytocin. It's a healing chemical. There's all sorts of data to show how oxytocin can heal. We live in a world right now where our biological domain is on fire, mm-hmm. with stress, with COVID, with pandemics, with the racial divide, the political divide, with wars. And here, I think, is what's going on in your biological domain. We are making a chemical called cortisol. Mm-hmm. Cortisol is a natural part of the stress response, right? When you're faced with a danger, you release cortisol. It activates all those things that we were talking about, you know, that feeling of anxiety, all these different things, because you're trying to run away from a saber-toothed tiger. Mm-hmm. Your heart rate increases, your breathing changes, your muscles get tense. You may feel sick to your stomach. You may get the cold sweats. Perfect for running away from a saber-toothed tiger, because you need to take the blood and you put it into your arms and legs. You pump it there, but you don't just make more blood. So you take it from your gut, because there's no point digesting lunch.
I was going to say digestion, everything slows down.
That's right. Yeah. And you take it from your skin, because if you're going to run far away, you don't want to overheat. So you get the cold sweats. Folks, if you've had panic attacks, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Normal part of your response. But here's what people didn't realize for a long time. Cortisol interferes with dopamine. Mm. Dopamine is a primitive chemical of pleasure. It's actually what is about addictions. All drugs and alcohol force the brain to make dopamine. Dopamine gets blocked by cortisol. But cortisol also interferes with oxytocin. Mm. So under a trauma situation, it's very difficult to feel any pleasure. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to trust. So some people begin to use drugs and alcohol, which is going to increase dopamine. But dopamine also interferes with oxytocin. Mm. So now you have two components: cortisol interfering with oxytocin, dopamine interfering with oxytocin. I truly believe that this is part of why in our world right now, because of the tension of the pandemic and all of the political divide, I think it's a result of cortisol. Because we don't feel much pleasure in who you're meant to trust. So you huddle into your protective group, because at least there we share something. We share some value with each other, even if it's not what other people share. But what I'm trying to remind people, that's an I am. Mm-hmm. Okay, but let's understand it. Everybody still wants the same thing. They all want to feel valued. That's the common thread. And at every and any moment in time, you can remind someone of their value. And whenever you do that, you increase your own value. That's what I'm asking people to do. It's a big ask. It's a big lift. I know it. But we can keep it frontal, not go limbic. We can change the world. One I am at a time.
I think a good, that's a perfect punctuation mark on this. And I think a good challenge to people going forward is if you think of even just three people right now, some people will be driving, some people will be walking around, maybe some people have a post-it note in front of them. Great, grab it and grab a pen. But if you think of three people who this week you could reach out to and in some way remind them of how valuable they are to you, or make them feel like they mean something in your life and make it genuine. And just be really mindful of how you feel. It reminds me of that experiment that Seligman did like forever ago with writing a gratitude letter to someone and then calling them and actually reading the letter. And it's almost overwhelming how good it makes you feel and how good it makes them feel and the lasting effect of it. So can you pick three people this week and go do that and just pay attention to how you feel? And then maybe do that from now on once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, think about that small change. You go into your local coffee shop or place. Notice what happens if you say thank you to the person who serves mm-hmm. you, or you walk away without saying thank you. Mm-hmm. You've had a small change on that person. You've affected their I am. You control no one. You influence everyone. You choose. What kind of influence do you want to be? And I believe in my heart of hearts that people are good, mm-hmm. that we do care about each other, that we do want to be part of this group. You know, when an infant is born, they're not aware that they're separate from the rest of the world. They don't recognize that separation of their identity from somebody else's
yeah.
for months. It's fascinating. That's how we come into the world, is connected. Connected. And then around 6 months, we've seen enough faces. We know that we're separate, and we develop stranger anxiety because we can compare sets of information. I recognize that face, but I don't recognize that face. Mm-hmm. And that limbic response happens. Am I in danger? The baby cries to attract their protector. Mm-hmm. Normal part of being human. It's okay. But as we grow older, we want people to be able to trust more and to be part of that community. And there's always going to be someone you go, you know, I can't trust that person. But now you have the I am to figure mm-hmm. out why.
Yeah.
What's going on in their I am that they are creating an impression of themselves where it just activates my limbic system a bit more. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to it. Don't dismiss it. Mm-hmm. But you can wonder about it.
That's so good. I could talk to you for like 4 hours. There's so many. I feel like I've done a very good job. There's like 20 rabbit holes that I did not go down in the interest of keeping this to a listenable podcast length. I don't want to let you go though, before I ask you about Drug Story Theater. I want you to talk a little bit about what this project is. And then in the process of that, tell us where we can connect with you online, find more information about you. You've written a ton of books that are just phenomenal. Your work is incredible. So Drug Story Theater, where can we find you?
Great. So Drug Story Theater is my nonprofit where we take teenagers in the early stages of recovery from drugs and alcohol. We teach them improvisational theater and we use psychodrama, and they create their own scripted shows about the seduction of, addiction to, and recovery from drugs and alcohol. Or we just created a new show about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences,
yeah.
where we look at why they maybe began to use, because ACEs is really about cortisol. Cortisol interferes with dopamine and oxytocin. So the kids then perform these shows for middle schools and high schools, or the ACEs show will be performed for adults in law services, teaching positions, places where they can become that charismatic adult. We perform these school for middle schools and high schools. So the treatment of one becomes a prevention of many. That's our slogan. The treatment of one becomes a prevention of many. But in between each scene of the show, the kids step out of character and they do PowerPoints teaching the audience about the neuroscience of adolescent brain or ACEs.
Amazing.
And all the audience, when we're doing it for middle schools and high schools, all the audience takes a pre-show neuroscience quiz. And then they take the same quiz after the show. And we're measuring how kids who learn about their brain change their perception. We're not trying to scare anyone, because if the brain is going to choose between fear and pleasure, it's going to choose pleasure every time. Mm-hmm. We're teaching kids when it comes to addiction, addiction is not about morality. It's about mortality. It's just the way the brain works. If you start using drugs or alcohol after the age of 21, 1 out of 25 people are at risk for lifelong addiction. You start using before the age of 18, that number goes from 1 in 25 to 1 in 4. Mm. 1 in 4 kids who use drugs or alcohol, which can be nicotine, marijuana, alcohol, anything, before the age of 18, their brains are at risk for addiction because of this limbic system prefrontal cortical connection. The limbic system is more in charge of the adolescent brain. It's using drugs without thinking about the future. I mean, we've taken all this complex neuroscience and put it into a format that kids can just get it. They understand it. So Drugstory Theater, www.drugstorytheater.org. That's theater with an ER, because so many of our kids wind up there. Drugstorytheater.org. My website is www.drshrand.com, drshrand.com. And there you'll find links to my books. The first book I wrote was on stress. The second book I wrote was
totally irrelevant to today. We have no stress these days.
Right, exactly. Stress and the cortisol response, and teaching that the best way to reduce your stress is to reduce somebody else's, because it increases your value, decreases your cortisol, increases oxytocin. So stress, anger, which won an award for outsmarting anger. When's the last time you got angry at someone, treating with respect? And then a book on fear, at which point my wife said, are you trying to tell me something? You've written a book on stress, anger. I said, no. And then a book called Do You Really Get Me? Theory of Mind. And then my latest book just come out, Unleashing the Power of Respect, The I Am Approach, which is a collection of stories by my patient teachers who taught me things, and then reframing everything through an I Am lens. So you see, there's no illness, there's no disease. These people were responding the best they could. Let's understand it. And you can get all of these on Amazon.
That's amazing. Dr. Joe, you make all of this feel so applicable and important in our lives, which of course it is. But sometimes, you know, we chatted a bit before we hit the record button that, you know, in psychology, when we're studying these things and doing this research and even reading each other's research, we see like, oh my gosh, this is so impactful. But then we make it all sound so academic and untouchable, and you don't realize how much weight it can have in impacting your life experience. And I just love the way that you've approached this work, because it bridges that gap so beautifully, and you can really see how every interaction in your life would be different, and in your own self-concept would be different if you put this stuff into practice.
Yeah. And I'm going to just change that, April, when you put it into practice.
Yes, I love
it. Not just if. The other thing is, folks, you know, I've got a podcast, Dr. Joe Show, exploring who we are and why we do what we do, where we talk with people from all over the world who are these neuroscientists or authors or beekeepers or Hollywood producers. And they talk about their lives, and we apply the I Am approach to what everyone's doing, because it's applicable to everyone. So if you listen to the podcast, the Dr. Joe Show, you have to put in Shrand, or else you will get a different Dr. Joe and you'll learn a lot about cigars.
Oh, okay.
Just in case.
Oh my gosh. I love it. This has been so fantastic. I just appreciate you so much for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, friends. This has been such a valuable conversation. I have a page of notes and especially a few resources that I want to make sure that you have, in addition to the couple of links that Dr. Joe shared that I'll have in this episode description and on the show notes page, some more resources for you. So hang out for just a second and I'll be right back. All right, everybody, I hope you see what I mean when I say that the information that we talked about today is so fundamental and can be applied in so many areas of your life. And also that Dr. Joe is just such a compassionate, amazing, wonderful human being. I really hope you loved that conversation. Just a quick reminder, his website is drshrand.com. If you want more information about Drugstory Theater, drugstorytheater.org. Both of those are linked below in this episode description or on the show notes page. Few things that I want to talk about in terms of, you know, kind of a, if you liked this content, you might really like a few other episodes of the podcast. One goes way back. It is episode 143. I've mentioned this episode a number of times, but this is an interview that I did with Dr. Stephen Hayes. He is one of the most cited scientists, not psychologists, I mean scientists across the board, one of the most well-cited scientists and influential scientists in the world right now. And he is the founder of something called acceptance and commitment therapy and also process-based psychology. He is so brilliant and he does such a good job of talking about some of this, the mindfulness side of what we talked about with Dr. Joe. He talks a lot about this values and strengths approach, which is very similar to Dr. Joe's approach that there's nothing wrong with you. You're doing your best in this moment. And I loved this conversation with Dr. Hayes, particularly as it relates to what we talked about today, because he talks about how you can almost use your emotional reaction to a situation, even if it's a severe one, even if it's in anger, even if it's a PTSD type response, anything like that, you can use that to understand what's important to you. And we talked about that a bit with Dr. Joe around this idea of value and feeling like a person of value. And that's important to us. So I wanted to highlight that episode. It's episode 143 with Dr. Stephen Hayes, founder of Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. That's linked below. Second, another one from like way back in the vault, but you will love it, is an episode with a man named Sean Webb. He actually has a really great TikTok account, P.S. So search for Sean Webb. It's Webb with two B's. It's Sean, S-E-A-N. So Sean Webb. To help you find it. He was episode 159 and he talks all about mind hacking happiness. So Sean actually works with the Navy SEALs and corporate, I mean, Fortune 100 giant companies, the US government, all these different people to help people do a better job, show up, be behaviorally more effective from a neuroscience approach. You can see how that relates here. As Dr. Joe was talking today, I was like, man, there are very few people who can take neuroscience and make it one, accurate, but two, very understandable and applicable. Dr. Joe is one of those people and Sean Webb is one of those people. So go check out episode 159 to get more information and to just meet him, meet Sean. He's also just incredibly great. And I think you'll really enjoy his episode. It's all about mind hacking happiness. Lastly, we talked with Dr. Joe a lot about how this I am approach can be used to foster a connection with other people. It can also be used to foster the connection that you have with yourself. In episode 315, I talked about ways to cultivate a relationship with yourself, and it relates so beautifully to a lot of what we talked about here. We started to approach and touch on elements of self-compassion, which I didn't go down that rabbit hole because, gosh, it would have been another hour that we would have been on this episode. But if you want to go deeper into how this might relate to developing a relationship with yourself, this is something I'm increasingly passionate about these days. I believe that is relationship number one that needs to be strong and authentic and healthy before you can do this with other people. Please go check out episode 315, linked below, Cultivating a Relationship with Yourself. Friends, I'm so happy you were here this week. I truly loved this conversation. I think I'm going to be on Dr. Joe's show coming up sometime in the future. I'm sending him dates right now. So be on the lookout for that if you want to hear a little bit more about his work and another conversation between us. Check out his show. Watch for me. Should be on it here sometime in the next couple of months. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I will see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.